Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
They'd get his...
I don't even have a joke, Dave smells like nougat.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
All right, Andrew, we told the people if they donated to the podcast, we could do amazing, cool stuff. We got the audio. Andrew, I'm excited. I think this is the biggest guest we've ever had. And back in the day, I roped Peter King into doing this podcast because I helped him out at Saints camp one day. But we have Zach Strief, the new Saints play-by-play guy. Zach, I'm so excited to have you. Thanks for joining us, guy.
Guys, I appreciate you having me on, and I'm a big fan. I keep up. I've listened, so I know which one of you guys supported my hiring and which one of you didn't, and I'm ready. I got bones to pick. Let's do it.
Well, Zach, I will say, and we said this right before we started, I said I thought of Zach, I thought of him on Tuesday when I did my second live hit for Channel 4 for their morning news. I thought of him because I have never done TV before, and I had a producer talking in my ear saying, Ralph, look up. You're being unnatural. Look at the camera. Look at the camera. Don't fidget. It was like my mom talking to me at church, and I was freaking out.
Yeah, it's different. I mean... And certainly, you know, it's one of those things, like, you get a great opportunity, right? And and you're like, well, I've never done that, but I'd be an idiot not to do it, right?
Exactly.
I got to go and do it. And then, you know, you got to deal with some criticism early on. And then eventually you're just the TV guy on Channel 4. And, you know, same deal for me. I'm in the same situation.
You know, before we get to the play-by-play stuff, you're in L.A. You're watching the Saint Chargers, the joint practice. What stood out to you this week watching the Saints?
Well, I'll tell you this, and obviously I have a somewhat unique position because I played in these practices last year, and we absolutely got our butts handed to us. I mean, it was a bad deal. Like, it was one of those days where you're on the sideline, you're like, well, this is not going well. I don't know how good these meetings are going to go tonight. And that has not happened at all this year. I think the Saints have been clearly the better team. And this is a really good football team. The Chargers, when you really look at them, you know, they started 0-4 last year and then went 10-2 to finish the season and were quite honestly dominant at times. So this is a good football team with a talented roster. And I think what you see more than anything is I think we're the better team. We're certainly the more disciplined team. We've certainly had a tougher training camp after hearing kind of what the Chargers players have been saying to our guys. So I think it's a good place to be in right now, and I think it's been a good week for all those guys to get to hit somebody new.
Well, Zach, man, you know, this is – I feel like you've been spending a lot of time on Twitter finally, and now you're not a player anymore. And so you've been infected by – you've been able to see, you know, what Saints Twitter and Saints Twitter panic is all about. And it really doesn't take much, especially in the preseason, you know, for fans to overreact. And, you know, what we keep talking about on the podcast is, listen, Drew Brees hasn't played. Cam Jordan hasn't played. Like, let's not freak out. Like, half these guys that you're watching are either practice squad guys or they're not playing at all. So this is kind of the one game coming up against the Chargers that's the dress rehearsal. And I'm curious. So we will see Brees. We will see Jordan, hopefully. And we'll actually at least see a quarter, maybe a half of – the Saints playing a real live game with the players that we should expect to see. So what would you say, like, is there something that you think is really important that you want to see in this game to feel good going into the season?
The biggest thing for me, especially in this third game, and it's the one thing that's completely different with everybody else but Drew, is just the tempo at which the offense operates. And you got to understand, you know, they're throwing a lot of stuff at these guys that have been here for, you know, 3 months or 4 months. they're things that Drew has heard for 12 years now, 13 years now. And it's a lot of information to get out in the huddle. It's a lot of verbiage. It's a lot going on. And it's reflected, I think, in the speed of play. And I want to see, I mean, always for us, the big thing was to get into the game, break the huddle, get up to the line of scrimmage, make the adjustments and go and start moving. Because this offense has always been best when it's moving at a fast tempo. And that's the thing to me, I think, that you always see with Drew. It almost appears more assertive. Like all of a sudden when Drew's in, like everyone's trying harder. And really what it is it's just the message comes across so much more forceful. The play calls come out better. Everyone knows there's confidence in what we're doing. And that's, for me, the thing that I want to see offensively. You know, defensively, I'd like to see us tighten up some of the coverages that I think to this point in camp so far, the defenses they've been playing has just been to avoid big plays and to protect against that, which they've done a great job of. And, you know, but at the same time, I want to get off the field. I want to see that first group get off the field, similar to how they started last week in Arizona. And certainly adding a guy like Cam Jordan to the mix is going to help that a bunch. But, yeah, I just want to see tempo. Tempo is, to me, is that's when you know, okay, we got the guys back in, and that's when you'll see what the team's really made of.
All right, I got to get back to your starting to play-by-play. What's the most surprising and challenging thing doing play-by-play that you didn't realize before you started doing it, and you're like, oh, my God, I had no idea?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're getting information from a lot of people, you know, and it was the one thing that I couldn't recreate that when I was practicing. So when I would sit down and call a game, you know, the game had already happened. And I was doing it by myself, and so I didn't have the ability to have a spotter and a statistician and a producer sitting there feeding me information. And so I was used to kind of looking down at a paper and saying, okay, I know that this play was for 8 yards and that it was a Mark Ingram carry. And so that information was readily available. In the preseason, especially, one, half these guys I don't know. You know, I mean, I obviously I know their names and numbers and the Saints roster I know, but you get to these other teams, I mean, there's 90 guys on these rosters. I mean, there's just
your
no
spotter's
memorizing
your friend.
It. Exactly. And that to me was the thing that certainly early in the Jaguars game was really evident, like, wow, I really have to learn where to put my eyes and where to get my information from. And it's really not all that unsimilar to, as a young lineman, those guys always say, well, the game's really fast. And you hear that from young players all the time, right? Like, it's so fast. And really what it is, it's not that the players are a little bit faster. What it really is you don't know where to put your eyes. And so you try and look at the big picture. You know, as a right tackle, if I don't know that, hey, this Will linebacker, if he comes, I know what else is happening to the left. So I'm just going to watch the Will linebacker. When you just sit back and watch everybody and there's like 8 people running around crossing your vision, it looks like it's 1,000 miles an hour. It's very similar in play-by-play. When I'm trying to see what the stats guy's saying, what the spotter's saying, and listening to the producer all at the same time and also watching the field, it's like there's a lot going on. But as you get into it and you start learning, okay, I got to look at my spotter, then my statistician, then back to my flip chart to see it, it starts slowing down a little bit and certainly helps. But, yeah, it's quick. I mean, it moves fast up there, and to sound good, you got to get the information quickly.
You did 100 games, I read, that practice. Did you just do Saints games, or did you do random 2005 Northwestern games for fun, since you were doing it by yourself?
to call myself giving up sacks? Is that what you're asking? No. Listen, I called all Saints games, and I called as many from last year as I could, and really, I only studied like 5 games, and I would call them over and over and over again. And you know, what you learn very quickly is, one, it takes a long time to prep for a game. So, you know, I was really only in consideration for the job for about 3 months. And so if I had studied how I have to study for a preseason game and called the game, I would have done one. I could have called 12, because it really takes about a week to get ready and you know, prepare to do one. And so what I did was I would prepare, I would learn, I would do stat research. You know, I had to do all of it on my own. So I had to do all that background that other people might help me with now. And then I would call the game over and over again. I would listen to it and I would say, I hate how I say that, or I hated how that sounded. Or, and then you go back and you kind of learn and you build off of it. And it's, listen, I don't know that anyone's ever learned to do this in the same manner that I did, but it's a unique situation. And, you know, listen, it's going to be a growing and learning experience through the entire season, but, you know, it continues to get better and easier.
Is it tougher, Zach? Because, I mean, you look at, like, Tony Romo, right? And he came in his first year, like, everyone was talking about how ridiculously good he was at it and how, like, how enjoyable he was doing it. And I would say that no one is better equipped than you. And certain, no disrespect to Deuce, who's obviously very qualified, but, like, you know the guys on the team and you know the plays, you know the offense, I mean, better than anyone. So you're more qualified to kind of offer commentary, and your job is really to set up Deuce and basically give him the floor after you give the narrative. So is that hard for you to not, like, I mean, I'm sure instinctively you want to chime in sometimes, right?
It's a really good question, and it's absolutely the case. Yeah. No, I mean, what ends up happening is, like, Deuce will start talking and I'll be like, oh yeah, I got something to say about that. Like, that's good. And I can expand on that. And then, you know, Deuce stops talking and it's like, oh, they've already broken the huddle. There's no time for that. And so, what I think will, you know, my goal and the place where I think this broadcast could go that could make it special is once I feel really comfortable in the mechanics of calling the game, I can lead Deuce into the analysis. And because I see it happening, but right now I'm so concerned about, like, get the, you know, who caught the ball, who made the tackle, get all that information out. I'm so concerned with that right now because that's not second nature, that I'm basically getting that information out and then letting Deuce go. I think when we're going to be really good and when it can become special is when I can get all that information out easily. Certainly when the rosters get cut in half, that'll be a little bit easier, but then also lead Deuce in. So, you know, I can say the play and what happened and then start the analysis for Deuce, who then will kind of jump into it. And
you,
I think
gotta
it could be really good.
You got to sneak in some insights for us.
Yeah, well, listen, if I don't sneak in the insights, what's the point in having me?
Exactly.
Right? Like, if I'm just going to do the nuts and bolts of a play-by-play, why hire a player? So I'm going to have to find that balance, and I will. You know, right now, it's seriously, it's the preseason for us as well. And, you know, I'm really worried about the nuts and bolts and getting that information out. But I think when we get into the season and I really know a roster and I've memorized, you know, who are the skill players on this team, that stuff will come a lot easier.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Jim Henderson and Hokie. They were fishing buddies and they were close. And the best part of their broadcast was when the Saints were obviously great from 2006 to 2011. I remember when y'all were just crushing teams in 2011, Jim would just set up Hokie and Hokie would have this chuckle. They were just so giddy that the Saints were well, but they would play off each other. It was just fun to listen to as a fan. But you've talked to play-by-play people that are obviously more experienced. You reached out to them. What's the most interesting piece of advice you got from people, from someone, on how to do play-by-play?
Well, I think, I mean, I'll tell you this, the single most beneficial thing that I've gotten is from Baltimore's play-by-play guy. And the poor guy, his name's Jerry Sandusky.
Oh, boy.
Now, it's with a G. And when I got the initial email that I got an email from Jerry Sandusky, I was like, I don't know if she can open this. Is this like virus? And I'll tell you, Jerry's been incredible. I've talked to Jerry every week. And Jerry's really the guy that gave me the flip chart that I'm using. And that's something for me that's like totally foreign. And Jerry's very unique in that he uses a completely digital platform. So I don't know if you guys have ever seen one before. And I think it's really fascinating. I mean, I was super fascinated by it. But what these guys use in order to identify players, it basically looks like a depth chart. And within, you know, each of those positions, they'll fill in, you know, little tidbits about them, little notes, their height, their weight, when they were drafted, you know, the little stories that you add kind of depth to the broadcast too. And Jerry gave me the format that he basically uses, and he does them all on computer. which is very unusual. I met with Jim. Jim gave me, it's very cool. I could probably auction this off for a lot of money. Jim gave me a giant Rubbermaid with all of his notes from like the past three seasons. And it's really cool. I mean, how, you know, just to go back and it's like, oh, I played in that game and now I see what Jim was thinking going into it, which was cool. But Jerry's been a huge resource to me. And I think, you know, for me, it made a lot more sense. You know, there's a lot of recurring themes. Everyone talks about be yourself, you know, be natural, be yourself. But it's very hard right now to be myself because I'm not a broadcaster. And that's exactly what I'm doing, you know. And so I think in time it will become easier. And I think the single biggest piece of advice, and I got this from Jim, I've gotten this from Jerry, I got this from Mike Tirico. I mean, it's been Tim Brando. They all say the same thing, is basically, you know, find your own voice, find out how you do it. Don't listen to Brent Musburger and say, I'm going to be Brent Musburger. Don't listen to Jim and say, I'm going to be Jim Henderson. Find your own voice and make it your own. And, you know, that's going to take time. You know, it's going to take me a little bit of time to really find what that is. But I also really believe that when I find that, that it could be very special to have two players, certainly with the insight me and Deuce have, having been players in New Orleans together.
Let's, you know, Zach, I thought of this before the podcast, is you are potentially the only person in the history of the world that can be in the Saints Hall of Fame as a player and in a broadcaster, as a broadcaster in like 20 years. Like, no one else is going to get this shot.
I never thought of that. But yes, no
well,
pressure.
Deuce,
I could,
Deuce
I could
is
do both
mess,
of those
right?
things. Yeah.
Well, Deuce,
yeah, Deuce
could
do it. That's right.
Deuce could do it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Man, the Jerry Sandusky thing, I just got to say, reminds me of Office Space. You know, the whole Michael Bolton thing.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, Zach, but it's like, why should I
ask
my name? He's the one who sucks.
I cherish the entire collection.
Nice.
Yeah, for my money, it doesn't get any better than when a man loves a woman.
Yeah.
Poor guy. I know, I feel so bad. And I'm telling you, he's like the nicest guy I ever met. He reached out to me, cold called me. He came and basically was like, hey, anything that I can do to help you, I'm more than happy. And I've probably spent more time on the phone with Jerry than anybody else. And so I'm actually looking forward. We get to play them this year, so I'm going to spend some time with them.
I want to say that when the scandal broke, I vividly remember ESPN, Mike and Mike, had Jerry Sandusky on, the Baltimore Ravens play-by-play guy, to like tell America, to remind them that they're not the same guy. But they did it because I want to say Mike Greenberg has a relationship with him and did it as like a favor to him, trying to help him out. Like, that's how well known and respected he is in like broadcaster circles. Like, he's that nice of a guy.
Listen, he's fantastic. And, you know, they had the Hall of Fame game this year. And so it was like my first chance after getting the job to be like, hey, I can listen to someone do this live with that type of, and you know, like looking or listening from a totally different perspective. And so I listened to it, and I think he made two references during the game to the fact that he has a terrible name. like he still has it. Like, he's still,
well, you almost
it
have
up.
To run with it, right?
You have to. I mean, you have to make a joke of it, because it's just a rough deal. And he's a great guy. And one of these years down the road, I'm going to make sure that Jerry understands what a big deal he's been for me.
All right, man. Well, Zach, you're retired now. So, I mean, listen, you're a homer. It's okay. We know you root for the Saints. But if you can, for, you know, 10 seconds, just pull yourself away and really look at it as a media guy. Let's talk offensive line. You've got five starters that are really good. Who of those five? Because we, you know, as fans, we know the skill guys. We pay attention to the plays that they make, and it's really obvious if a skill guy is playing really well or poorly. Offensive line, unless you're giving up a sack, it's just hard for the layman to pick that stuff out. So,
sure.
I'm curious, who do you think is the most indispensable offensive lineman to the Saints?
I think right now it's Max Unger. I mean, here's what's, you know, the center position is unique. It's kind of like a captain within, you know, a leadership position. And Max makes all the calls. He's responsible for the tempo of the group. He's really responsible for the tempo of the whole offense, getting up to the line of scrimmage and, getting everything moving and kind of setting a tone. So I'd probably say Max right now. Now, there's a lot of talented guys in that room right now. And I think there's been plenty said about it. Tron Armstead and how he's healthy and he's playing so well, and he is, which is really encouraging for all of us. Larry, you know, Larry Warford's probably the most technically sound guy we have in that room. Ryan Ramczyk's going to be a Pro Bowl player before too long. And, you know, obviously Andrus is working back from a surgery, and we haven't gotten to see him a ton, but they're all talented. It's a really good room. But if there's one guy that I'm moving out of there that I say that's going to make a ripple effect, it would be Max.
If there's one ex-Saint guy that I text with some frequency, it's Jonathan Goodwin, your old buddy.
Sure.
And I remember this was a couple years ago, so not last year, but the year before, you were having what I thought was the best year of your career. And at the time, I think you were like 32, and you're just having an amazing season. And I remember texting Goody and just being like, man, Streif is playing out of his mind. He looks awesome. And I remember him texting me back and just saying, yeah, you know, it's one of those things where the talent's always there, but if you can just find a streak of health where you feel healthy, it's not that, you know, he could always do it. This is Goody talking, but if you can find a streak where you're healthy and everything kind of aligns physically, then age doesn't matter as much. And I don't know, do you think like this is kind of setting up maybe that way for Armstead this season?
Well, you know, for Teron more than most probably. You know, Teron has one of those makeups that just has lent itself to injury. And it's not, you know, Teron works as hard as anybody in our building. He really is. I mean, he's got a really impressive work ethic, but, you know, he's gotten hurt and he has things that's kind of part of his kind of like physiological makeup that make him apt to injury. And so I don't think with Teron, it's as much. Listen, when you're an older player and you've had issues and you've had, you know, things that nag you that you don't tell anybody about or you don't report, you can get healthy and all of a sudden look like you're a better player. I think with Teron, it's almost unfair to put him in that category because he's been injured for like 3 of the last 5 years. You know, and like we haven't seen Teron at his best, but for like maybe 10 games. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, if Teron Armstead peak, whatever that is, whatever level his best is he a top 3 offensive tackle in the NFL?
Yes. I think you put him with Tyron Smith when he's healthy and he's got some back issues now. I mean, he's just kind of part of the deal, and probably Trent Williams. I think Trent is probably the closest comparison to Teron, and I say that because a lot of times the guys that are really athletic don't have the power, and they are good at kind of getting in the right place and, you know, good impact. Teron is one of the more powerful offensive linemen that I've ever been around. I mean, he does things to grown men that, like, you probably shouldn't do at this level, and on top of that, he has hands down the best feet I've ever seen in an offensive lineman. So, you know, he has a skill set that is really unusual and really unique, and you know, it's the reason why a guy who's played the last 2 seasons basically with like 1 leg and a quarter of an arm can even play in this league. Like the injuries he's had, I don't know one other player that could ever perform at the level he's performed at with what he's had, with what he's dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, we always joke that he's like, we need to test him not for drugs, but he might be an alien. Like, his pain threshold or whatever his healing power is, like, he just powers through it in a way that, as a Saints fan my whole life, he's got to be up there with, like, the Ricky Jacksons and the Eric Martins, 2 guys that come to mind. They could just – they just play through it, and it doesn't matter what it is. And it's and not only do they play, but they play well.
Yeah.
So he's a unique – he's a unique guy. The one thing I was going to ask you, Zach, is the Saints last year on third down, they were 18th or 19th in NFL. And even though that's like just below average, for Saints fans, because we're spoiled rotten with great offense, it felt like a disaster on third down. But it really wasn't. It was just slightly below average. But when you go from first to 19th, right, it's a drop off a cliff. What needs to be different in 2018 for it to be better?
Well, I'm going to tell you this. This is completely my personal thought on this. Obviously, there's a lot of people in that room that are very good at putting together third down plans, and lots of players that are very good at executing them, because we've been, top 10 in the league for the past 12 years, short of last season, including, the best third down season in NFL history. So my opinion is we have always thrived with a threat that could run the seams in the middle of the field. When you think back to guys, that's Robert Meacham, Devery Henderson, Jimmy Graham, guys that could occupy the middle of the field and vertically stretch it. Devery and Meach always played this, they ran a lot of their deep routes from the slot or even from just off tackle. And it really affects and stretches a defense to have a guy running like that down the center of the field. And we didn't really have that last year. Willie got hurt early on. He's far more of a possession type receiver like a Lance Moore. And we really haven't had a tight end that could do that in a while, really since Jimmy left. And so, I think that's the position to me that Robert Meacham, Devery Henderson, Jimmy Graham, who were a little different, but they were doing the same thing. They're accomplishing the same thing. And, when you look at this team, there's really two guys that have the ability to do that. One being Cam Meredith, and the other being Traquan Smith, who's shown all camp kind of the ability to do that, to make those tough catches in the center of the field. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we ended up with two of them. I think that's kind of a role that they realized early on, like that's a need for us. That's something that helps us out. And it's going to open up a ton of stuff, not just for receivers, but also for the backs, to where, all of a sudden that check down that was getting us four, that Mike linebacker is vacating the middle of the field. Now it's going to get us 12. And that's the difference between converting a third and six and not. And so I think, to me, that's kind of the role that we were missing last year. And I don't know that we ever found a really good, consistent way to replace it.
Hey, Zach, how's your old buddy, German Bushrod, and rookie from LSU, Will Clapp? How are they looking? And what do you think their odds are of making the 53?
I think Jermon's had a great camp. I think Jermon looks very good. If you know Jermon, he's a guy, he's really physically talented. He's got good feet, good movement skills, and all those things still exist for him. And I think he's a really good, steady veteran presence in the room. And, Coach Payton, Mickey Loomis, those guys really value that role. The guy that can come in and kind of add a little bit of calmness to a room and settle everyone down and have experience and, a guy you can put into a game and no matter what, he's going to battle his tail off and he's going to find a way to block people. So I think Jermon, to me, Jermon is making this football team. Will Clapp, he's been, I think, a pleasant surprise for some. And I don't know why it was so much of a surprise, because I think he's completely matched what his scouting report was as a player. Will's a guy, he's not going to dazzle you with his movement abilities. He's not the strongest player on the team. He's not the fastest player on the team, but he's a football player. He's smart. He has great football instincts. He's picked up the offense really well. They can plug him in at center or guard. And even when he's playing a guy that's not as good as that's better than he is, Will's going to battle. He's going to find a way to block him, spit in his ear, tell him a story. Whatever he's got to do to keep that guy out of the backfield, Will's going to do. And I see Will as a really valuable guy. Now, that room is tough right now. I'll be completely honest with you. Josh Laribis is probably a really underrated player. People don't know anything about. Josh Laribis does some things that I've never seen players do. He's got some really impressive movement skills. I remember the first day he was in camp last year, and he reached a three technique from the center position, and me and Max looked at each other and were like, what in the world just happened? Like, something you just don't see people do. So he's a really good player. I think Michael Ola's had a great camp. I think Andrew Tiller has had a very good camp. Cam Tom is a guy I know that the Saints really like. He's a guy that I like a lot. that I had kind of mentioned in the offseason. So that's a rough room. I don't want to make any predictions on who's going to make that because I think I'm setting myself up for failure. And I need to look like I know what I'm talking about now. It's all I've got.
Love it. Ralph, did you have anything else?
We've lost Ralph.
Did we lose Ralph? That's not good. Ralph, did you mute yourself?
Zach, only 20,000 people listen to this, right? So you can be totally honest. No one's going to pay attention. Who's a player that when you played, you're like, I hate that guy. I want to kill him.
I'm so excited I can say this now because he just retired. Charles Johnson, no question. Charles Johnson drove me absolutely bonkers.
Not a Falcons player. Interesting.
No, Carolina Panthers. No, not a Falcons player. Yeah. The Falcons, we beat the Falcons too many times. No one cares about the Falcons anymore. they're like our whipping boy. We have no qualms with the Falcons. Charles Johnson is a really frustrating pass rusher. You can block Charles Johnson and be like, oh, good, I got him, we're good, and then he'll grab your wrist, put it over your head, dip, and hit the quarterback. And you're like, how did that just happen? I was in great shape. And I actually heard at one point, you know, he's a Georgia guy, John Stinchcomb, obviously a very good friend of mine, and they were at a Georgia event, and he was like, tell Streif I hate playing him. And I was like, that's like the best thing. It's like the greatest compliment I ever got because I hate playing you. So I'm glad you were miserable on the other side. So that was my guy, Charles Johnson. He just retired, had a great career there. And now I can say that without any fear of reciprocity coming from the Panthers.
Scott Shanley once told us that by far for him it was Frank Gore.
Yeah,
he talked more trash than anyone he had ever played against.
Well, Frank was more than willing to put his face down and break your helmet.
Frank Gore is like he's drank from the fountain of youth or made some sort of deal with the devil. Like he's going to be playing running back in 2025, getting 900 yards and 6 touchdowns. Like he's of like the marvels that I've seen. He's up there as like, he just doesn't, he's been the same dude for like 5 years. Like he's remarkable.
Listen, he's Ben Watson. Ben Watson.
Yeah.
Like 37 years old. And I mean, Mark had the best comment ever. I laughed out loud when I saw it. He said, he looks like the Under Armour mannequin. And he is legitimately the Under Armour mannequin. Like, the impossible body that they put their jerseys on to make him look good. Like, we'll pretend like these aren't way too tight by putting them on this mannequin. That's literally Ben Watson.
Well, so, people, you know, back, guy. It feels like 100 years ago, people don't remember this. The Patriots played in a playoff game when Ben Watson was young, and Champ Bailey was at his peak, and he intercepted the ball in a playoff game, and Ben Watson chased him down from the other side of the field. And when Champ Bailey was going to have a 100-yard interception return, Ben Watson chased him down and tackled him at like the 2-yard line in a playoff game. And everybody's like, I can't believe a tight end just chased Champ Bailey down. But that's because Ben Watson is a physical freak.
Ben Watson ran 111 yards on that. And the thing that you've just forgot is he hit Champ Bailey at the 1. And Champ fumbled the ball into the end zone.
Oh, I forgot that.
And it was a touchback.
So it was a touchback.
God. I mean, it was literally like, it's the craziest play ever.
Ralph has an encyclopedic memory of football stuff. And he just got owned.
I did.
Ben's like one of my favorite teammates of all time. So I give you a break.
He probably tells that story a lot, I'm guessing.
That's right.
Absolutely. Ben Watson, he's going to catch. He's going to catch 50 balls this year, right, Zach?
Yeah, maybe more.
Ooh.
The last time, this last season here, I think he caught like 78 or 80. So, yeah, listen, and he's looked great all camp. He missed some time with a little back deal, and he's going to be totally fine. He feels like he's over it. So, he's super talented, and he's playing with a guy that knows exactly what he is and who he is and how he can catch a ball and where he can catch a ball. And, you know, those guys are going to be that Drew and Ben have a great connection.
All right, Zach. Well, you've been so generous with your time, and we're way over time, but I cannot let you get out of here without talking about beer for a second.
Yes.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. Ralph, I mean, I need to say this. Ralph and I, we both love beer.
I love beer. And I have a 2.5-year-old. So beer time is anytime.
Fair enough. I'm from New Orleans, but I live in Virginia now, and so you know, I still have family, and I try to make it back whenever I can. But I have yet to make it to Port Orleans, and so I'm dying to go there. And next time I get home, it's definitely my first stop. But I'm not a hops guy. Like I don't like the IPAs. I'm just not a hops guy. So I'm cool with ambers, the dark stuff, lagers. I like sours. What's my go-to? Next time I visit, what's the beer I have to have?
Well, here's what'll be interesting. I'm gonna give you two beers I'll give you three because I'm a salesman. First of all, Gleason IPA comes out this week. And Gleason, you know, I went to Steve a year and a half ago and we were kind of chatting and it was like, hey, I'm gonna make you a beer, we'll pour it down your feeding tube, and he was all fired up about it. And so you know, a year and a half later, we ended up making this Gleason IPA. It's a New England style IPA. So people that don't love hops or the bitterness associated, it doesn't really have a lot of that. You really get all the floral notes, all the fruit from the hops without the bitterness. And I think Gleason's going to be a great beer, and we're super excited about it. And that'll be in restaurants, and it'll be in bars, and also in stores. We're going to package that as well. On the lighter end, I'll give you a couple. We actually sell two different lagers in the market. It's really kind of more our specialty is to get into lagers. It's our ownership group. We're all guys. We love to fish. We love to hunt. We knew if we were going to have a brewery, we're going to have beers that we could take with us. We said if we own a brewery and we have to put someone else's beer on the boat when we go fishing, we won't respect ourselves.
There's a problem. Yeah.
That's right. And so we have two. Riverfront Lager, which is kind of our flagship beer, which is a nice German-style Hell's Lager. A little bit bready, sweeter beer, really good, really clean lager. And then Dorada, which is our Mexican lager, which we just recently released about a month ago, is a beer I think you probably really like. It's one of those beers that, like, you know, the number one question, ironically, you get even when you own a brewery is like, well, I don't like really strong beers. You know, everyone drinks, listen, Miller Lite, Bud Light, that's 93% of the market, right? So it is what it is. Most people like kind of mild beers, and Dorada fits that bill perfectly. It's a great beer. Mexican lager, you put a lime in it. It's not quite as skunky as like a Corona is, but really nice, clean beer. And I think people, it satisfies 99% of the world. And I think it's Dorada's a beer that's done really well for us. We're excited about. So
well, I appreciate
you letting me get those plugs.
No, I approve of Port Orleans Brewing Company embracing breakfast beer because I've only been once. But I believe breakfast is not just for Bloody Marys. And I had the grapefruit Storyville IPA. I don't even like IPAs, and it was magical, yeah. People. I'm just going to say
it was good.
Magical.
I like that. That's good to hear. Yeah. I like that. We did a strawberry Riverfront Lager last year that was really, really good that we did not make enough of, so it disappeared really quickly. But I think maybe the best strawberry beer in New Orleans. I'll make that statement because I'm allowed to because I own the brewery.
Covington, nice. Covington strawberry is strong. That's
what
I'm
else do you guys want me to say? Well, you come down when we get to spring
about
next
that,
year.
Ralph.
Yeah, what do you quit pumping other breweries?
Yeah,
oh my God! How many times has Covington come on your guys'
Never.
Podcast with
Never.
You?
Never. True. Right.
Hey, I apologize. So Zach, we're gonna get. This is the last question. We're gonna get you out of here. But I just want to say, people, I'm rooting hard for you. And Zach, I will not say anything bad about you if you make mistakes during the radio broadcast. Is when you see my morning hit on Channel 4, and I'm talking to Eric Paulson. If I'm staring at my feet or twiddling my thumbs, and Eric looks confused, if you don't tweet anything negative about me, I'll be nothing but positive about you.
Well, that's fair enough. I'll tell you this. And I'll tell Eric to take it easy on you. I'll tell him that he's got to give you a little bit of a break. And, you know, technically we're partners. Channel 4, WWL, we're all on the same team. So you're contractually obligated not to say anything negative about me. But, listen, I know when I took this job, I knew. One, I'm replacing Jim Henderson, right? And, I mean, it's a bad career decision. You know, to replace Jim Henderson, and he's the reason why.
That's like the Breeze heir.
Exactly, you're exactly right. I mean, it's the only job in New Orleans worse than replacing Jim Henderson is going to be replacing Drew Breeze. So, I knew when I took it, there was going to be criticism, and I'm totally okay with it. And I acknowledge that it's going to come. And you know, here's the reality. It's going to take me a little bit of time, but all I wanted to do is create a broadcast that people in New Orleans, in the Gulf South, just love listening to. and I'm going to work my butt off. And I really believe that I will get there. And yes, it's going to take a little growing pains. Yes, the preseason is very difficult. It's not exactly the most ideal way to start, you know, with these rosters where it's like, okay, I got 200 people down there. I know 30 of them. It's not ideal. But I really do believe that when it's all said and done, this will be a great move. And, you know, any Saints fan, listen, I'm a Saints fan. It is what it is. I'm a total homer. I'm not embarrassed to say it. It's okay. There's plenty of people in the media that can be negative and can say bad stuff. I'm a fan, and that's what I hope that I can bring to it.
But fans, we don't want the Saints radio play-by-play guy to be neutral. We want him to be pro-Saints, but if it's bad, just be honest. That's all we want. You know,
well,
that's
listen,
what Henderson
we,
was.
Listen, Taysom fumbled the ball last week, and somebody texted me and was like, my gosh, buddy, it's the preseason. I mean, I'm disappointed. Like, it is what it is. Like, last season, I'm injured. I'm at home. You know, I'm sitting around. I'm not doing anything. The game comes on, and my whole family's around me. And by the end of the first quarter, I'm alone. There's a reason for that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm, like, way too into it. I'm all excited. I'm up, and I'm yelling, and I'm screaming. It doesn't happen in the preseason. You know, listen, neither one of these games has been super exciting. They usually aren't. When the games start and they're real, having passion and excitement about what's going on, as well as disappointment when it doesn't go well, that's not going to be a problem. I'm not going to be able to hide it. It's who I am. It's the way that I've always been. I have not always shown that in the media because it's not appropriate as a player. You know, as a player, it's like, man, you gotta kind of walk that straight line and you gotta give professional answers. You know, that's not my life anymore. That's why I'm on Twitter all of a sudden and I can have an opinion. And, you know, I just always felt like I wasn't going to rock the boat as a player. And, you know, now I get to have fun and enjoy it and be myself. And I think when it's all said and done, I think people will enjoy it, and I hope they do.
Well, that's great, man. And listen, we knew with your exit interview with the Saints when you your retirement party, if you will, you got a chance to show your personality there. And I immediately felt like you would be a great fit for that from that point on. And honestly, it's one of those things where, you know, you're following with Jim Henderson, but you followed a pretty good right tackle in John Stinchcomb when you were starting with the Saints or you're first starting. So you got this, buddy.
Listen, yeah. People didn't like me then either, so it's okay. I'm used to it. I'll be just fine.
Love it.
Zach, you gave us way more time than we asked for. Thanks a bunch, guy. And we'll talk to you down the road. And people, you know where to find him. He'll be the play-by-play guy for the Saints. So, and go to Port Orleans.
Go to Port Orleans. Drink all the beer.
Appreciate you guys having me on, all right? Y'all have a good night.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks.
All right, fellas. Bye.
Bye.